Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 with Fan Eilish and Justin. The final day of regular season action here in the NHL. A couple things still to figure out. We're going to talk to Luke Gazdick from the studio down the hallway in about 2 to 3 minutes to help tee up tonight's stakes.
Yeah, we know he'll be interested to see who the Oilers will play. And as we wait on that, we have a full set of series to break down in the Eastern Conference. Eilish and I will dust off our models and fill out one side of the bracket at 6:30.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. We've also put some stakes. It's going to be a competition. So that makes things more exciting. Arizona officially to Utah now. Official. The NHL Board of Governors unanimously voted in favor of the sale and relocation of the team's hockey assets today. And they might begin the season without a name or a mascot. We're going to get into that in a little bit.
But we know it'll be Utah, not Salt Lake or Salt Lake City. Utah coming to the NHL. No NBA tonight. Maybe just one important NHL game, but we will endeavor to provide best bets by the end of the show.
Okay, so for tonight's games, determining the final two spots or placement in the Western Conference bracket, Edmonton and Colorado are going to play at 9:30 p.m. That's on Sportsnet. And Colorado already set with their matchup with the Jets, which is going to be awesome. And Edmonton has their opponent TBD, but they have no say in the matter. That is going to come down to Vegas facing Anaheim. If Vegas wins, they're going to face the Oilers. That simple. If the Kings win, who are playing Chicago, and so the Kings are 1 point below them. Mm-hmm. I almost had this. If Vegas loses and the Kings get 1 point, they will face the Oilers. The wildcard team plays the Dallas Stars. So a big difference between playing the Oilers, the Dallas Stars, if you're matched up as the Kings or as Vegas. So I guess before we bring Luke in, what's the best case scenario?
Well, Vegas controls its own destiny, right? As you mentioned, they win and they get the third spot in the Pacific Division. But I guess the question to be asked, given that we've had some whispers or some thoughts about tanking or purposely not going out there and getting the 2 points, does Vegas want
the two points?
Does Vegas want to play the Oilers, given how difficult it was last year? But again, it did springboard them towards a Stanley Cup. But yeah, the Oilers are a tough task. It's just that the flip side of that is Dallas, and Dallas is not going to be any easier, you would think, for the Vegas Golden Knights. So we'll see how they approach the game, and we'll see by the end of the night what the matchups are. Okay, let's bring in our first guest of the day, our only guest of the day, Luke Gazdick of Sportsnet. And of course, he's going to be very interested.
You're wearing Oilers colors.
You're not hiding anything, Luke, with those Oilers colors.
Way to call me out right away. I wasn't sure if anyone was going to notice that.
All right, well, Justin's laying it out here. Edmonton, obviously, they don't have control over who they're going to play. But I don't know. Vegas, you work real hard all season long and you get rewarded to play the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't know if that's what Vegas would, if that's what Edmonton would prefer. How do you see this one shaking out?
I mean, I think they'd rather probably prefer LA. They have the upper hand on them this season and in the last two playoff years. But I mean, I'm kind of in the mindset of you're going to have to go through Vegas at some point. Why not get it over with early? I think they have a couple new players that are going to be entering their roster in Mark Stone, and Hurdle's only played a couple games. It'll take them some time to adjust. They're banged up. Aiden Hill is banged up in net. And I just think Vegas is going to get better and better as this playoffs roll on. The more games they play, the more experience they're going to pick up. And I just think Edmonton has home ice. I think why not get it out of the way early here? What a confidence boost this would be if you could beat them in the first round and then continue on from there. This is the best Oilers team, since the coaching change. They're the best team in the NHL. The numbers don't lie. On home ice, they have been electric. And so I'm sure, I don't know if the fans feel the same way I do. I'm sure they'd rather have LA, but I'm in the mindset of bring them on.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, right? Because Pietrangelo, is a little bit banged up. Aiden Hill not playing particularly well. This might be the time to get Vegas, but I guess Vegas does kind of control that. And Vegas has the game tonight, has the opportunity to push through and meet the Edmonton Oilers. But what's the better matchup for them? I'm not saying they're going to tank or that they would, even if they felt this way. But if it's between Dallas and Edmonton for Vegas, which is a better matchup for Vegas for you?
Honestly, if I was them, I'd probably be wanting Dallas. I understand that's crazy even saying that with the season that Dallas has had. They have no trouble scoring goals. But I just I see Vegas tempering that offense a little bit. I think, you know, they have the upper hand on Edmonton in the last 2 years, but I think for Vegas, I think I'd rather be wanting to see Dallas early than to see this red hot Oilers team. And the way Connor McDavid's playing, I'm not sure if I would want to be running into them in round one. But we'll see. Certainly on Edmonton's side, like I said, if they could get Vegas to cross over and have to go through the Central and not see them till the conference final, that would be good for them. But if I'm Vegas, I think I'm wanting Dallas and going through that that division instead of the Pacific.
One more on the Oilers, and we want to try to get on to every Canadian team that's going to be going to the playoffs before we let you go, and we only got so much time. So last one on the Oilers. This team is different than it was last year. Of course, it didn't work out the way they wanted last year. What is the new thing, the thing that's changed that would provide you with the most optimism, given that, you know, the stakes are pretty high this year for the Oilers, and they ran into a wall last year in the Vegas Golden Knights?
Well, for once, they're the oldest team in hockey. And maybe that doesn't sound extremely positive, but I think for a long time, everyone's had this this MO of them being this young team, a lot of youth, but they brought in some great veterans. Sammy Carrick, I'm a big fan of on the fourth line, playing some good depth minutes. And Adam Henrique's been outstanding since he's come over. You know, factor in the addition of Corey Perry a couple months before that. They're just a little different. They're more experienced, more veteran. And the biggest thing for me is they're just never out of the fight. In years past, going down, you know, a number of goals in a game, whatever it may be, they kind of got inside their own head. But I talked about some of those stats since the coaching change. They're first in goal differential and first in third period goal differential. It doesn't matter what happens early in a game. They've had the fault of having some slow starts. But once they turn it on and they get buzzing, they're just nobody like them. And no matter what the score is in the hockey game or what the situation is, I see a team that's a little more veteran and experienced to handle that emotionally and just kind of continue to look forward.
We're chatting with Lou Gazdick ahead of a big night in the NHL. Okay, so let's talk Leafs Bruins. And you might be wearing Oilers colors, but I guess I'm technically wearing Leaf colors, so we're kind of in the same boat here. But this is the third time in the last 11 years that these guys have faced off, and we know how that's gone for Maple Leaf fans. So how can it be different this time around? How can the Maple Leafs slay the Dragon and get past the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, well, I might be wearing Oilers colors, but I grew up in North York. This is my team too, right? Mm-hmm. I grew up born and raised Leaf fan. And if we want to try something different, I think we should all stop talking about how much in the past has happened. We got to stop drumming up this narrative. Every time they look on TV, they're going to see how they've done in the past. If there's any year that I think they match up against them well, it's this year. I've talked about the Leaf roster a number of times on TV and how I just think they're built different. It took guys like Burt and Max Domi, even Ryan Reeves, a fair amount of this season to get ingrained with the systems and the way the team plays. But this is a team that's not intimidated anymore. Second in total hits per this year, second in hits per game. It's a team that doesn't back down. They're not intimidated. If a team wants to play that way, they'll play that way. It's just a Boston roster that I think is susceptible to, you know, maybe losing in the first round here. Two very capable goaltenders who looks like probably Swayman will start, but either guy can get the job done for them. They work hard. They compete. But if there's any time that the Leafs could do this, I like the roster that they have in front of them to do it.
So there's no catch-all stat or measure to determine playoff success, although third period goal differential, I kind of want to look at that. I think that was maybe an important one that you mentioned there, Luke. But just ending the season on a heater, I think does mean something, at least in the NHL, and the Winnipeg Jets have been on quite the tear to end the season here. How much do you think that predicts success, and what is that late season surge worth for you when examining Winnipeg and their first round matchup against the Colorado Avalanche?
It's huge. When they went on a bit of a slide there, even me, I was like, I'm not sure about this Jets team, but I played with and know a couple guys in that locker room, and that is one of the best locker rooms in hockey. From top to bottom, the veteran influence there, starting with their captain, Adam Lowry, and moving down from there, that's first and foremost, is they have a ton of character. I think Rick Bonus sets the culture there. They have four lines that they can roll that are extremely hard to play against. They're big, they're tough, they're fast, they're skilled, and that is not an easy building to play in. And if you get through all of that, well, then you still have to score on the probably Vezina winner, Connor Hellebuck. Mm. They are built to win. And, you know, I don't want to go too far with my prediction on how they'll do, because the Central is a nightmare to get out of. But they're going in feeling good, and that's a really good hockey team.
Last Canadian team for you would be the Vancouver Canucks facing off against the Nashville Predators. Now, the Canucks kind of had that really hot start, and everybody was surprised by how they came out, and then they were pretty consistent for the rest of the season. So how do you think they fare against a Nashville Predators team that is, I guess, surprised a lot of people on the stretch to make it into the playoffs and be as threatening as they seem to be on paper?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people counting the Vancouver Canucks out just because they don't necessarily have the playoff experience that other teams do. But I covered this team all year. I stayed in this studio late nights watching almost all their games and covering them in great detail. And this is another really good hockey team. Elias Lindholm's playing some good hockey, and that gives them a lot of depth down the middle with JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. Thatcher Demko, I'm a huge fan of. One of the most athletic goaltenders in hockey. He makes circus saves all over the ice for how big he is. Their decor is big, active, mobile. Quinn Hughes leads the way back there. And they just work. Like, when you watch this team play, they don't give you anything. They have another team that has four lines that can roll. Rick Tocchet has certainly flipped the culture there upside down. They're 3-0 against Nashville this season. And I give the Preds a lot of credit. They've had some great individual efforts, and UC Saros is a heck of a goaltender. But I think that the Vancouver Canucks are going to surprise some people here and at least pick up maybe a first-round win. But I hope people aren't counting them out, because this is another good hockey team too.
So you're pretty bullish on all three of these teams in the Western Conference, and you've kind of stated about culture and locker room being very important things, and I guess that stems from coaching, right? You mentioned Knobloch's got the best record in the NHL since he came aboard. Rick Bonus, if it's the best room in the NHL, Rick Bonus has to be doing a pretty good job, and Rick Tocchet, what he's done is just this serious departure from what we saw with Bruce Boudreau last year. If you had to compare Knobloch, Tocchet, and Bonus in terms of the job that they've done this year, can you split those hairs?
It's tough, but I'll probably give it to Rick Tocchet. From where the Canucks were to where they are now is night and day. Going through the coaching carousel, the personalities they had in the dressing room. I mean, you watched them last year. I'd be in here in the studio doing late night games, and they looked like it was 20 different players playing 20 different hockey games. Where now they're just one cohesive unit, and that's not an easy thing to do, to come in and get your veterans on board early. Patrick Alvin made some great moves bringing in a couple players, but to flip a locker room upside down like that is not an easy thing to do. I think Rick Bonus had the right players in place. Edmonton had a number of the same core guys in place, and Darnell Nurse and Connor McDavid and Zach Hyman, Leon Draisaitl. But I just look at Vancouver and I see from where they were to where they are now, that's a very impressive job getting that team to 50 wins. So I'll split the hairs and probably give it to Rick Tocchet.
Hey, it's the last night of the regular season. I know the grind is still to come, Luke, but congratulations for reaching this point. You've done a great job this year. And enjoy the last night of the regular season before the playoffs begin.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. You guys are the best.
Thanks, Luke.
Thanks, Luke. Luke Gastic of Sportsnet. He's done a great job this year.
He has. Really great. And he totally called him out on his Oilers, and that's okay. Because he's
being pretty intentional with it.
Yeah, and that's great. But it is a big one tonight, as we mentioned. Oilers are already locked in their positioning, but the fate will be determined. Vegas facing Anaheim. If they win, they face the Oilers. It could also be the Kings. So I think we laid out a pretty good look at this Canadian picture. We're going to go through our Eastern Conference playoff bracket as well a little later in the show, and we'll make our predictions. But you brought an interesting point up about some of the odds when these series have been launched.
Yeah, I mean, it does depend on what happens tonight, clearly, because if the Kings and Oilers match up, I think the Oilers will be pretty serious favorites. But there is, even throwing out the odds, because that doesn't really matter, at least for this competition or this conversation, the four series that are projected to be closer than the others, the closest, I suppose, would be the ones involving Canadian teams. I mean, the Leafs and Bruins, not a pick 'em, but pretty close. Mm-hmm. Avalanche and Jets, not a pick 'em, but pretty close. Canucks are decent favorites, but there are four stronger favorites expected to be, at least. And Oilers Vegas, I believe it'll be close to a pick 'em price, although the Oilers will probably be small favorites there. And again, like, this is a really, really good crop of Canadian teams. Maybe the best that we've seen in recent history here, at least in terms of, hey, can you break this cup drought? Mm-hmm. 31 years? Can we get to that point where, one of these teams can get to a cup final, can finally win, can inject some life into, you know, the final series of the season in the Stanley Cup final? It's going to be tough for even, you know, two or three to get through the first round, given their opponents. Oilers Vegas, I mean, the Oilers definitely deserve something better than Vegas given their season. But yeah, that first month really weighs them down. Bruins Leaf does seem appropriate. The Jets had a great year, but you know, they didn't separate themselves either. And the Canucks have, but there are some doubts about the Canucks. At least the money or the price of the series would suggest that. So yeah, I feel like there's a really good chance that a Canadian team wins the Stanley Cup this year. The Oilers, I think, are the betting favorites. Canucks are Pacific Division leaders. The Jets and Leafs definitely have a chance. But we could be dwindled down to two pretty quickly, mm-hmm. based on, you know, the matchups and how this is all shaken down.
Yeah, when we're going to do our Eastern Conference playoff bracket, Rangers and Hurricanes seem like the massive favorites coming out of the East. But yeah, the Leafs have a bit of a difficult path to get there. The Oilers going through Vegas, I like what Luke said, like kind of get them out of the way. Use that to invigorate your team as you approach the second round. I hope the Leafs can view that as the same thing. You get through Boston, you're able to slay that dragon, even though we shouldn't be talking about things from the past, as Luke said, but it's there. It's obviously prevalent when they think about this playoff matchup, when fans, when we talk about it. Does that do something to take down a foe, a storied rival? Does the Oilers taking down Vegas early on do something? But the counterpoint is that they'll probably be the healthiest in terms of like playoff battle at that point, right? All these series, original series, you're kind of starting fresh. You know, by round three, people are playing with broken ankles. Yeah, and they got,
that's when things get weird, right?
They got things taped together, yeah. And so you it's kind of a wash. But that first series is when you should traditionally have the healthiest, most hungriest teams, because it's a round one, and a lot of these teams have playoff scars to get through. So I don't think it's going to be easy for any of the teams that we just mentioned with the short odds. Like, they're priced the way that they should be priced.
I think Luke does make a good point, though, about getting Vegas now, because Pietrangelo, he's dealing with an injury, and Hill's season just hasn't been very good, at least until this point. But if they start to get into the rhythm, that's when Vegas could be dangerous, when you are beat up and you have to go through those mountainous defensemen they have back there. Maybe it'll be a little bit more difficult in rounds two and three. So maybe the Oilers catching Vegas early, they can slay the dragon and they can propel themselves forward. Maybe they get the Canucks in the next round, and then you've guaranteed to have a Canadian team in the Western Conference final when things get a little bit weird. So yeah, it kind of all rides in a lot of ways on that Oilers-Vegas series to start, because yeah, I think Edmonton is Canada's best Stanley Cup chance, but they have their kryptonite right off the bat, or the team that has been really, really difficult for them historically, the team that, you know, that maybe the Stanley Cup was won in that second round series last year between Vegas and Edmonton, because those teams were so good last year compared to everybody else. So the Leafs, yeah, they don't have an easy draw. The Leafs, if they win, they get Florida next or Tampa next, which is going to be very, very difficult. And then you get the best from the other side. So it's tough. It's tough. And the Jets too, with the Avalanche, then you get, maybe get the Stars right after that. So it maybe opens up the most for Edmonton, despite maybe getting a start that isn't quite just.
All right. A team that's not in the playoffs yet, but, you know, if they do anything like the other expansion teams, they could be in it in the next couple years, are the Utah something. Mm-hmm. Now, Ryan Smith, the new owner of Utah Blank, just tweeted out, over 6,000 season ticket deposits in the first 2 hours. Utah is amazing. And following that, I saw a tweet from Greg Wyshynski that mentioned that Tuesday applications were filed with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for the trademarks on the following names. Are you ready?
Oh, okay. Okay. This is new.
The Utah, Utah Blizzard.
All right. Pretty mid.
Utah Venom.
No.
That's a bit too comic book for me. Utah Fury.
I don't love it.
Utah HC.
Provision. Like, I think they could be that for a bit, but you need to have something eventually,
and
don't you?
Utah Hockey Club.
Okay.
Those were the first trademarks filed. And then a little earlier, we found out that the new team will just be called Utah rather than Salt Lake City, which I think Utah is, you know, Utah Jazz. Utah is an easier, quicker, punchier than Salt Lake City something. Mm-hmm. But also don't expect a mascot and an official team name until season two of the franchise. NHL wants the team to have plenty of time to get it right.
Yeah, if it's done in haste, it could be done wrong. I think there's a better chance that it's done wrong. So this is probably a good thing that they slow play it. I do think, though, that you can, like, tippy-toe around it a little bit. Like, you can dip your toes in the water. You can maybe try some things and see what the reaction is, right? Like, you can have some identity without actually choosing your identity, and maybe that's the best way to go about actually naming your team. But if it's Utah Hockey Club for the first year, I mean, at the draft night when someone gets an NHL sweater, it's going to be a little disappointing. Mark Scheifele-like from all those years ago when Winnipeg got their team back. But I think Utah Hockey Club can work in the short term before you actually get something. But I feel like, you know, they got to lean into the mountainous sort of thing. Like, everyone's saying Yetis, right?
Yeti.
And maybe there's some trademark problems there given, you know, there's a company. But it just feels like, I don't know, Fury? Like, what does that even mean? Like, that's like a no identity for me. So I think they should actually
Venom.
Take this slow. And it's okay if it's Utah Hockey.
Well,
Club
I mean, we're seeing that right now with the PWHL. Obviously, people were frustrated when the PWHL, a brand new league, had to put together six inaugural franchises in 6 months, have a league, have colors, have facilities, have a CBA, have arenas to play in, get ticket sales. And oh, yeah, they couldn't get a name in time.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's fine because I believe that they're going to get it right. There was that situation where the names, I guess, were leaked, the same situation with trademarks. And it went over pretty poorly online.
Yeah.
And whether that led to the withdrawal of those being the actual team names or not, they've given themselves this season, this condensed season, to figure out exactly what their team names are going to be. But you can take feedback from fans. If you're a brand new fan base, I'm pretty sure I saw Ryan
Smith.
Was that Ryan Clark? Ryan Smith. He had a poll out where you could submit names. So at least they would know what the general fan base is interested in. So if they go with straight up Utah HC for the first year and then they nail it, whatever, right? Like, the quality of play, the arena, making sure you have a fan base, which clearly 6,000 season ticket deposits already is a good start. But we're always going to be skeptical because this move felt quick. It felt like, why? I think there's still some confusion around, like, why it had to happen so quickly and why Salt Lake. So the main important thing is making sure the infrastructure and the players and the performance is good and nail the name. And if it takes an extra half season, think about how cool that merch will look like in a couple, you know, in 20 years when you had the original Utah HC merch. So there's something there.
Branding is unbelievably important. And I don't know if it's like, I don't know if everyone agrees that this is unanimous, but Vegas Golden Knights and Seattle Kraken, to an extent, I think nailed it. Like, they do have a strong identity. They have strong colors. They look different than all the other NHL teams. And I do think that is important. Looking different is important, and I hope they find a way to do that. There are only so many colors that haven't been used. There are only so many designs that would be considered unique, I suppose. But you got to find that. You got to be different. And if it means being very, very bland to start, I do think that's okay.
Okay, so quickly, just a text here in the text line, and our text line is open at 59559. If you want to suggest any options for Utah, we'll send them out. A quick message here was, there's a ton of beehive iconography in Salt Lake.
Call them
the sting or the swarm. Venom is nasty too. I'll have to look into the beehives and Salt Lake and figure out the connection there. But I love the suggestion. Send that in at 59590, which they named the Utah blank. All right.
Okay.
On the other side of the break, Jess and I are going to fill out our Eastern Conference bracket with stakes on the line, and it's solidified, and we're doing it. If you want to stick with us, we'll be on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590, and then you can catch Hockey Central on Sportsnet.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on The Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ailish and Justin. All right, we ignited some hot debate on the text line at 590, 590. You can also tweet us or whatever other platforms you use. And let us know what you think they should call Utah's team. It's going to be Utah and not Salt Lake City. So keeping that in mind, we've got a bunch of messages here, and I'll go through a couple. We liked this one a lot. Randy from Thornhill, Utah Peak. And obviously, Utah, beautiful mountainous landscape. You could have a very nice jersey.
As far as I understand, yes.
With a, well, yeah, actually, I've never been. Mountainous, canyonous. The landscape is what we need to be selling here, okay,
yeah.
Utah? And so Peak would be a pretty cool-looking logo.
And they'd be the Peaks, which doesn't make sense.
No.
But I like
that. I don't
think
it's plural. It's the Peak.
I know, but, like, you'd call them the Peaks. Maybe you would.
The only thing I'm thinking
I like something that's purposely a little vague. You know what I mean? And I get that it's about mountains, but like when you try to like put something too intentional, too specific, I think it can kind of backfire. Like it almost seems like a throwback to something that would be before, that wouldn't be so new.
Yeah, like
would
a little vintagey.
Beat. Yeah.
Okay. We've got Utah Elks. The elk is a national animal. Winner, winner, chicken dinner, Bill.
We'll have to fight Edmonton over that.
Edmonton might not love that. If the emphasis is being different, how about the Utah Unicorns? I think they could do some very dynamic jerseys with that.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd be scared of a unicorn.
Well, it'd be easy to learn into the purple, right? The Utah
right.
Jazz have kind of gotten away from the purple. Maybe
I think this jersey
away.
Color scheme has to have purple.
I think
maybe
100%
purple and like a nice like a blue.
Yeah, because it's the only only color that's up for grabs.
Yeah,
there's no purple represented in the NHL, and I feel like it would work.
Roy says, love the show. Thanks. How about the Utah Bandits since they stole an NHL team? Well, the Buffalo Bandits. But I, as somebody that has a cat named Bandit, I like the Utah Bandits.
As a Bandit owner, you're down.
As an owner of Bandit. The Utah Rough Riders, don't think you could do that one. We're getting a lot of CFL love here on the text line. Rob from Red Deer, I'm excited about the Utah team colors, at least. I agree with that. We've also got the Utah Blizzards. I think the Blizzards is awesome. Imagine the Blizzards going against the Avalanche for a conference final.
I bet the Avs wouldn't even allow that.
No, you can't do that, I don't think. Yeah. But Blizzard is a sweet, like, I'm picturing some, you could do so many cool things with these jerseys, the color schemes, the Avalanche and the Blizzard, but yeah, I think it's a bit too close. DQ might not like it. But the same text line says, same texter here, says Utah Yetis with baby blue, royal blue, and white home jerseys.
I think there's something about the Yeti.
So back to the text about the beehive. So our beehive expert on the text line says, it's because the Mormon settlers considered the city a beehive of community strength. There's also a beehive on the state flag of Utah. And I say just steal the sting from Sarnia. Who cares? We have a beekeeper in the text line.
Okay.
Nice. Okay, keep them coming. 590, 590. We've got lots to go through. We'll let them collect, and then we will definitely get back to them. Let's talk about our Eastern Conference bracket, though. So it's nice we can split this up because, obviously, we don't have the Western Conference playoff matchup set, as we know.
We'll do that tomorrow.
Yeah, as we know, we're waiting on the decision or the game here, Vegas hosting Anaheim. If Vegas wins, they'll play the Oilers. If not, the Kings could sneak in there and play the Oilers, but the wildcard team will play the Dallas Stars. Tomorrow we'll go through our Western Conference bracket. So starting with the Eastern Conference, how do you want to do it? Do you want to start with the team close to this city?
Let's do it.
Okay. And I think it's one that obviously a lot of people, I think this might be the one that we disagree on too. So Leafs and Bruins, folks. I've got the Maple Leafs beating the Boston Bruins in game 7 at TD Garden. And yes, I understand that that sounds crazy, but this is crazy. It's time to slay the Dragons. 3 times in the last 11 years, the Leafs and the Bruins have played, and all 3 times, the Bruins won in game 7. This is the end of that streak. Unfortunately, the Bruins did beat the Leafs all 4 times this season, twice in overtime and 2 other times 4-1. And yeah, you can put all these stats up against each other, but I'm going to agree with what Luke said about this being the time to beat the Boston Bruins. The Leafs are a better team physically. They're more adept for playoff performance. They're more offensively talented. They exercised one demon last year with their win over the Bolts. Now time to do it in a different fashion. You got rid of one, and it's time to do that again. That's why Game 7 at TD Garden is as crazy as it sounds. The Bruins are also kind of facing their own prove it. You know, last year, obviously, they had that historic regular season, and they got swept, or they lost as well. And they both are coming into this series kind of slumping, right? Bruins lost first place, and whether they gave it up on purpose or not, they did. The Leafs just lost four games in a row. Auston Matthews didn't get 70. But I don't think any of that matters once it's game one at TD Garden. I will say the things that scare me about the Bruins are their coaching. I think they're one of the best coach teams in the NHL. As you've seen, they've done this with a team that I early on said wasn't even going to make the playoffs. So that might come back and bite me. And their goaltending is a really incredible tandem. And they have a clear special teams advantage against the Maple Leafs. Leafs power play has been struggling, as we've seen over this last stretch. And Boston's penalty kill is elite. So it's going to be close. That's why I have it in seven games. That's why I have the Maple Leafs doing it at TD Garden. But I think it's time.
Yeah, this is definitely the most interesting series for me when doing this exercise, at least in the Eastern Conference. I looked at five different things when trying to figure out who I thought was going to win each of these series. One being recent form, two being the head-to-head matchup between them this year, three being the goalie, because the goalie is kind of the trump card in a lot of series, and then playoff experience and whether or not they improved based on what we saw last season. And I think, like, in all five of these categories, there was something notable between these two teams. In terms of recent form, the Maple Leafs are good down the stretch when it mattered. They lost four straight to end the year, but they were good over the last month and a half or so when they were playing real games. Boston has been awful lately. They've been bad to end the season. They've been bad for about a month and a half now. But when looking at the head-to-head matchup, Boston brutalized Toronto in all four matchups this year, which I think means a lot heading into this series. Toronto's got the boomer bust goaltender with Ilya Samsonov, who's been great, but was awful for the first couple months of the season. And Boston's got a really steady hand in Jeremy Swayman, but Ullmark might be the better one right now.
Well, I looked at this too. Swayman against the Leafs this season, 3-0, a 1.30 goals against average and a 9.59 save percentage against the Leafs this season. So he would probably, I would think, if you're in the Bruins, you'd be starting him in net. But you're right, like, that tandem is scary. The Leafs don't have that tandem. And that's why goaltending, you know, can win you championships. And that's one of the things that I wrote as why I think the Bruins could end up winning the series too.
And one more between them that I thought was interesting is that what we've heard all year is that both Boston and Toronto have a worse roster this year than last. And I think that's entirely true for Boston, because you can't lose Patrice Bergeron and pretend that you're better. But I don't know if the Leafs are better or worse than they were last year in terms of talent. Like, yeah, Ryan O'Reilly walked out the door, and you lost a couple of the real solid Kyle Dubas two-way forwards that kind of anchored your team. But I kind of think they're better.
I think they're better offensively than I can remember in a long time. Deeper.
And that's maybe what tripped them up in the playoffs before.
And that's it. And they're more balanced. And I think if they take that balanced approach, they can be like waves over the boards, where the Bruins, I mean, I hate sounding cursy, but you look at the names up front and there's a few, but there are names that you're going to be like, really, you're going to get beat by this guy? But that's also a skill set of the Bruins, is like they're en masse, like a really tough team to play against, and they're so well coached. So I have the Leafs beating the Bruins in game seven, and I say that as I take a deep breath, because I think everybody in the world that lives in Toronto needs that to happen.
On a neutral, it's a true coin flip to me. Mm-hmm. But I guess the tiebreaker for me is that this game, game seven, if it is tight, if it is basically nothing separating them, well, the game seven is going to be played in Boston, TD Garden. I've been in the building for a game seven at TD Garden, and it is unbelievably intimidating.
It's scary.
It is the toughest place, I think, for this Maple Leafs team to go in a game like that. And for that reason, like, I just don't know if the Leafs can go.
But Leafs
considering
six,
the
then.
Past, I think there's a better opportunity for them to win in six than in seven, at least in my opinion.
I think you're right.
Because I think I can barely separate these teams, and I know game seven's in Boston, I will pick the Bruins in Boston in seven.
Okay, quickly on our bracket, we've decided 3 points for the correct team and correct number of games. So if I get Leafs in seven and you get Bruins in seven, that's 3 points. And if not, you're getting 1 point for the correct team only, The loser, after all this, will buy the other a round of golf.
Which means I lose even more money on top of that.
That's correct.
Which is unfortunate. Okay, let's move to the next one.
Okay, so that's the first one that we disagreed on. But we do have the same teams for the next stretch, but just maybe a couple different games. We're going to go back to the first round of the bracket here. Mm-hmm. So just one slide before that, if you could. Perfect. So we're going to do Panthers and Tampa. So we both have the Panthers advancing. I have it in a six games. You have it in seven. For me, you know, I think you are a little bit more of a believer on Tampa over the stretch. We talked about Tampa before. I mean, I just think the Panthers have proved that last year's Stanley Cup Finals appearance wasn't a fluke. They're really built for playoff hockey. They're mean. They're fast. They're talented. They have the type of guys on their roster that you do not want to play playoff hockey against. But I will say, I'll give Tampa credit. They surprised everybody really this season with the success. A championship pedigree, I think, runs deep. That's why I've given them six games to really push the pace of the Panthers, but they're a little bit of an older team. But it's Vasilevsky. And like that, to me, playoff Vasilevsky, he can do so many things that not many other goaltenders can do. But I still think the Panthers take this one and they might go far in my bracket.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to convince yourself, at least for me, when looking at the goalies, that Bobrovsky can be better or has been better. I mean, if you look at the balance of the season, and that's not really fair because Andrei Vasilevsky did not enter the season under perfect circumstances by any stretch of the imagination, but his numbers are pretty bad. And he's been good at late, but you know who's been even better of late and all season long? Well, Sergei Bobrovsky. So I can't discount them on the goaltending, and I can't really separate them in a lot of the other important ways, but I just think it's as simple as this. It's a close series, but it's Florida's time, and it's already been Tampa's time.
Yeah,
and
it's kind of reason, a passing of the torch in a sense. Like, you were the team from Florida that was successful. You have the coach, you have the ageless Stamkos, Hedman, Kucherov, like those are guys that
they're very similar.
They are. And now it feels like Florida is like the little brother that's getting their moment to shine. So yeah, Florida for us, Panthers being the team that's that does go through.
You got it six, I got it seven.
Okay, let's go to one of the biggest, I guess, discrepancies in terms of playoff matchup, and that would be the New York Rangers and the Washington Capitals. I mean, this one, you don't have to galaxy brain it. I almost could have done it in four, but I thought maybe Washington could sneak a goal in there. We both have the Rangers winning in five games. They're the best team in the league. They're the President's Trophy winners. They just went 26-7-1 in the final 34 games to be the best in the league. Panarin's having a career year. Lafreniere, who we thought was going to be the next Sidney Crosby, is finally finding his own as well. Shesterkin found his game in the second half of the season. He went 17-5-1 with a 220 goals against and a 930 save percentage. That's from February 9th onwards. I think peaking at the right time, going into the playoffs means something. His first half of the year was bad. He found it. They also have Jonathan Quick, who's like already kind of surprised people with his, you know, rebound in his career. And they have 30 home wins, the most in the NHL, 28 comeback wins. They know how to win at home, and they're going to have home ice advantage. They know how to win when they're coming from behind, and they have a top five PP and PK. So, spoiler alert, I have the Rangers going pretty far in my bracket, and I'm very positive about
that. You know,
them.
It's a comprehensive victory when you're touting the backup goaltender, but that's just the facts. They are better than Washington in every single measure. You can look up and down the list. I don't think you're going to find anything that makes Washington better than the New York Rangers. Washington's one of the worst playoff teams to ever make the playoffs. One of the worst playoff teams ever with a negative goal differential flirting with, I think, 40. Like, that is just brutal.
Minus 36 goal differential.
Washington's a bad team. The Rangers might be the best team in the Eastern Conference. They check off all the boxes. Strong recent form. Goaltending's a strength, even with the backup goaltender. It's pretty good that you have a squash match in the first round that helps teams on the way to a Stanley Cup final. I just think the Rangers have everything but immediate playoff experience, and that might come in later for me when looking at an Eastern Conference final.
I will say, I'll give Washington a lot of credit. They won four of the five final games of the year to snag that wild card spot that nobody cared about. They sold at the deadline, and Ovi, he's been a part of this NHL season storyline for sure, but he's not able to will this team past the first round, and he probably will be okay with that so he can rest up and score more regular season goals next year. Okay, final one. So we both had them in five. Now, Carolina and the Islanders, this is the second straight year that these guys are going to match up. I have the Hurricanes taking a bit quicker business here for the Islanders. I have them in five. You have them in six. I mean, I think this is one that maybe could age a little poorly for me because I was thinking about the Islanders while I was writing my notes out, and they did have a complete second season turnaround there with Patrick Waugh. Sixth most points in the league in the last month out of a team that really wasn't even close to being in the playoff picture. They fought tooth and nail to get into this, and they're going to rely heavily on their goaltenders. I think they want to be this year's Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
And last year's Panthers, they had similarities with this team. If they can find something, they could be a team that surprises. I just look at Carolina, and they're the analytical darlings. They're always the team that people believe are just the best team in the NHL on paper. And so is this the year? I mean, they've been a conference final. They have 3 years of being division champs. It's like, what's stopping you? Maybe it's just getting Jake Guentzel, which has looked amazing. So I have Carolina taking the Islanders in five games, but I will give credit to the Islanders because they have something about them that they found that scares me a bit.
Carolina could check every box. If Frederik Andersen or Pyotr Kochetkov play elite goaltending, then yeah, they're going to check off every box for me. Recent form has been great. They've addressed their issues by bringing in Jake Guentzel, and maybe Evgeny Kuznetsov can pot a few. They've been really, really good in basically every measure, whether you look at the start of the season, the back half of the season, the last month. Carolina hits every box. I did six games, though, because head-to-head this year, they split. The Islanders have finished strong. The Islanders could have potentially better goaltending in the series.
Yep.
I don't think it's worth a series victory, but I think it's worth hanging around and maybe winning two games. So I did pick them in six, Carolina. I think they're a really, really good team, and they're better than the Islanders. But the Islanders do well to muddy the waters, which makes it six for me.
Okay, let's take one last look there on that board. That's our first round of the Eastern Conference. I've got the Panthers, the Leafs, the Rangers, and the Hurricanes. Justin has the Panthers, the Bruins, the Rangers, and the Hurricanes. A pretty similar look in terms of playoff games. No sweeps and a couple game sevens. Now, going to the second round, this is where it gets tricky. Both of us have the Panthers, but I have the Rangers and you have the Hurricanes. So why don't you, why do I have the Rangers maybe? Because.
Well, you tell me.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to think of how I should lay this out best. I have the Rangers because, as I said, I think they're like the team maybe without any flaws, like from top to bottom, offensively, defensively, and in net. And obviously being the best team in the league, I'm not trying to, you know, galaxy brain this at all. But I just think when it comes to them playing the teams that they're going to make to the top, I think they have that easy start against Washington. Like, that's going to be a nice, hopeful, like, easy, quick, short round for them. I definitely believe in the Panthers. We both have the Panthers there in that second round. I have them winning in six against the Leafs. You have them winning in seven against the Leafs. Why do we not believe in the Maple Leafs to beat the Panthers?
Well, I got Boston, so a different matchup
for
me. You know, I'm a little scared of Boston. I'm getting a little bit more scared of Boston when looking at this matchup. But Florida again, doesn't check off every box for me. But Florida has the most real-world experience given what they did last year. And this is a very similar team than it was last year. It's healthier because it, you know, it limped to the finish line last year. It's ready to go again. And I feel like, you know, what we saw last year counts for a lot. And what happened last year also included a near reverse sweep over the Boston Bruins. I just think they're the better team. I think they're more in the proper area, at least in terms of a trajectory and a championship arc. So for that reason, it's the Panthers for me, but it's going to be difficult. And I've got the Panthers in seven now, twice in a row, which is problematic because you're playing a lot of games and that may come in later on. As for the Hurricanes, again, it comes down to real world experience. Carolina Hurricanes have been playing multiple playoff series for a very long time with a similar group. The Rangers just came back to relevance last year, lost in the first round to the New Jersey Devils. I think experience carries Carolina threw in seven games.
The thing that scares me about the Hurricanes is their goaltending, and that's why I don't have them going further than our final one here, which is our conference finals. I have the Rangers beating the Florida Panthers in seven games. I love that we both have a seven game. That's the way it should be. I'm big on the Rangers. I think the Florida Panthers were a really wonderful story last year, but the Rangers just a bit more solid in general, and they might be less worn out when it comes to this time to play this big time Eastern Conference final. So I got the Rangers advancing and you have the Panthers advancing.
Yeah, again in seven games. It illustrates how much I love the Panthers, but how difficult the path is that I cannot give them a victory in fewer than seven games. But last year in the Eastern Conference final, it was the Panthers and the Hurricanes. And the Panthers won all four games. It wasn't easy, but they won all four games. I think that's kind of the tiebreaker. I think Carolina's done more to be better, but not enough to be better than the Panthers in the end. But we'll see what 21 games does in a Stanley Cup final. They were beat up last year. I think after 21 games, they're going to be beat up again.
I mean, I will say my main reason for not believing in Carolina has to do with Freddie Anderson, but in his 10 games since returning from injury, he's got a .951 save percentage and 3 shutouts. So I think it's just scars. So hopefully he proves me wrong, because that would be a really great success story. Of course, Carolina is a team that everybody loves to cheer for, and the fact that they have a chance this year, they're one of the heavy favorites, will be fun. Let's quickly take a look at best bets, and then we can finish the show with a couple more messages about the Utah blank, whatever team you want. So tonight's best bets for me, we're back in PWHL action after the long international break. So let me explain this one to you, folks. I'm kind of being the opposite of a homer. I'm betting against my friends on Toronto and Montreal. But the reasoning is because Boston and Minnesota are both playing against Toronto and Montreal, which are very Team Canada teams. Boston and Minnesota are basically all Americans. They're going to be pissed off. They just lost the World Championship. They just lost on home ice. And the girls were partying all over them in Utica, not Utah. And so I think both these teams, who are the underdogs tonight, come out a little bit more well-rested, a little bit hungrier, and they're not, you know, fat and happy after they win a gold medal and a world championship. So I'm kind of feeling the underdogs tonight, and don't tell my friends on either team.
This is something we've never seen before, right? You win a world championship, and then you got to come back and play.
A couple days later, some of them didn't even get to go home. Like, you're just...
And we saw it a little bit with the rivalry series. I don't know if you looked at that and seen, you know, what happened in the rivalry series, what happened to those teams. But yeah, if you were just, like, the best party of the year for the Canadian women's national team,
it happened
the other night.
It just ended,
and they didn't even get a chance to go home, some of them. So, yeah. I like those picks. I think the Americans get, like, the smallest measure of revenge tonight with those clubs.
Oh, one quick thing, too. Minnesota can clinch a playoff spot tonight with a win in regulation or with some help. And Toronto could also win... clinch with a point, but they're the ones playing Boston, so I'm picking Boston on that one.
Okay, I'm going to pick the only game that really matters in the NHL tonight. That's Vegas, -1.5, -140 over the Anaheim Ducks. I mean, the Ducks have just, it's not been a good year. Vegas, I think we'll try to make a statement like, yeah, we're not messing around like Boston did and other teams have done leading into the playoffs. I think they're going to take the challenge straight on with Edmonton and want to win this game in emphatic fashion. Maybe take the third period off because you're up by a couple goals already. I like Vegas to roll over the Anaheim Ducks.
-140 still, too.
Yeah, that's not the greatest. But
it's okay.
One more to just chew on because, you know, the only real dissension we had was Bruins and Maple Leafs. I feel like if you're a Leaf fan, it's your responsibility to have the Bruins +425 to win in 7 games.
So I should bet that. Like, that's the opposite of what I picked.
If there's anything, any solace for a Leaf fan going into a series against Boston, is that you know what Game 7 looks like in Boston. +425, that's a decent little happiness edge. I think you'll be happy to have it if those two teams do meet in a seven-game series that ends, of course, at TD Garden.
Okay, a couple of last text messages here from our listeners. Someone says, just keep them the Utah Coyotes. They have the best logo in all of sports. Losing that is a travesty. Either that or the Utah Wolves, but we know that they're going to...
If you're doing Coyotes, you got to just do Yotes. Utah Yotes.
You can't because Arizona's keeping the domain and everything.
Sure.
This is Joe from Woodstock. I think the perfect name being the flag is a hive on the flag is a Utah wildebeest. And to my last message with hive on a flag, how about the Utah honeybees? Really into bees tonight.
I like the wildebeest idea.
Knees.
I don't know what a wildebeest looks like, but like a hairy mammal makes sense to me for Utah.
Utah Stingers. That's Daryl from Victoria, BC. How about the Salt Lake City Snappers, a snapping turtle? One of the few Western states with snapping turtles. Wow, everyone's a geography major.
Salt Lake Snappers has got something to it. Snap the puck around.
The Utah Temple, the Utah Rads, the Utah Canyon, the Utah Shakers, the Utah Rockies. You stop me when you... Utah has a desert, therefore the Utah Viper sounds appropriate. Sneaky, fast, and vicious. That's from Terry.
It's better than Venom, but still snakes. It just doesn't scream snakes to me.
Jeff from Mississauga. Utah Lumberjacks would be great. Fearful. You can do a lot of things on the front for a mascot. You can have purple, black, and white trim. Matte black helmets, purple pants, white trimming numbers. You are like a designer.
If not a hairy animal, a hairy man.
The Salt Lake Sasquatch. If they go to Salt Lake, that'd be cool. That's Chris. Utah Roadrunners, since they just killed the coyotes.
Ooh.
Wow, that's a good one.
That's very good.
The Utah Gold, Salt Lake City Saints. The beehive references are just, there's so many bees. the bee's knees. The desert rats. Was fun.
You did a good job filtering, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot I can't read, I'll tell you that. But this was fun. All right, tomorrow we'll do our Western Conference bracket. We'll get you set for what will be the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs on Saturday. See you guys tomorrow.